Just because the NFL season is now firmly in the rearview mirror does not mean the betting season is over. There is still plenty of opportunities to put a little something-something on the games. No matter what tickles your fancy, there is still plenty of action to whet your appetite. But just remember, where you bet is every bit as important, if not more so, than what you're betting on. That's why I tell my friends to go to mybookie.ag. MyBookie has been ahead of the game for years now. And why does that matter? Oh, I don't know, in a million ways. Better lines, better payouts, less rules. At mybookie.ag, use promo code ZABE and have your deposit matched halfway up to $1,000. That's a free cash bonus for making your deposit. Use promo code ZABE to claim the offer. Bet, win, and most importantly, get paid with MyBookie today.
What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
This is the new Weight Watchers, built for real life and real results, no matter what mode you're in. Maddie went all in for her big day and lost 33 pounds. Emily lost 85 pounds and hit her goal while still living her life.
Weight Watchers gave me the tools and I feel amazing.
Join the millions of members and lose weight with the number one doctor-recommended weight loss program. Lose more at WeightWatchers.com.
At 6 months, participants in a clinical trial of Weight Watchers program lost an average of 12 pounds.
And here we go, 8.9 to play. Sturts with the catch. Sturts bounce pass to the corner. Fulgaris for three.
Oh!
9 to play.
Florida's got no timeouts.
Iowa takes the lead by one.
Staff making sure they know no fouls.
This is going to be Darling. He's got to go.
Darling puts it up.
This is the ZabeCast, hosted by a Pop-Tart loving kid from the mean streets of McLean, Virginia. And since you probably have other, more important podcasts to waste your time on, screw those AirPods in tight and let's go.
Here we go. Those two plays, while both amazing and chock full of interesting backstory for the two heroes for St. John's and Iowa. Let's be honest, that was some brain-dead dog shit, what are you doing defense by both Kansas and by Florida.
What are you doing?
What are you doing? Thank you for pressing play. That was a great decision by you today. Overstuffed podcast, once again, you're welcome, that's fine. Scott Dolphin, my guy, from FM 106 up in Milwaukee, Mr. Iowa. On the upcoming Cornmageddon showdown in Houston between Iowa and Nebraska. He's going to tell us about the absolute hatred that this poor kid, Price Sanford, is getting for Nebraska. He was Iowa's best player, but he transferred because of Fran McCaffrey getting whacked, plus two of the dumbest. You've got to be kidding me. Is this a real story? Ways to die you have ever heard. So let's begin. South Regional, stacked and packed, corn all the way up to the top of the barn. Iowa versus Nebraska, Illinois versus Houston. Somebody said you are not prepared. Even though Houston's playing at home, said one person on Twitter, they are simply not prepared for this sheer volume of corn. Somebody else said, no matter how much they think they're ready in Houston, they are not, repeat, not stocked with enough Bush Light for this weekend. It's going to be fantastic. Let me start, though, with the St. John's upset, question mark, of Bill Self in Kansas. They were technically the favorites, so it's not really an upset. They were the lower seed by a click, but that's about it. And the final play and the kid who made it is a hell of a story. Dylan Darling is his name, but his nickname is Bells. And there's a reason for it. But let's have Pitino first explain what went through the final play call with just over 4.5 seconds left in the game.
But here's the amazing thing and the funniest thing I've ever been involved with. So we're going to run a play, and but they got fouls to give. And Bells comes up to me and says, run power, which is a high back screen pick and roll. So I walk away. I said, okay, power. I walk away and said, wait a second. He hasn't scored a bucket, and he wants to run a play for himself. And I'm thinking as I'm walking, I said, but he's Bells. And not only did he do it, he went with his right hand. So real proud of him, because to want the ball when you haven't made it a shot is unbelievable. So both of these guys had a major impact in us winning tonight. I'm so happy for St. John's and the fans. We had a great fans out here. And we get to go to D.C. And I'm just so jubilant, so happy for the fellas. We've taken another step now. So it's just awesome. Proud of our guys. And now it's just starting. The fun's just starting.
Okay, so there it was. Bells. It's because Pitino once said of this player, who had not scored, by the way, in the game. More on that in a second. He once said, you know, he's got balls as big as church bells, hence the nickname.
And they never broke. They just stayed with it. Dylan Dawkins, he's got balls as big as church bells. And it's unbelievable.
I love it. The first time I ever heard that expression was in the movie Dragnet. 1987, Dabney Coleman was one of the leads in that. I believe Dan Aykroyd was in it as well. And he's in this scene with a preacher negotiating to, you know, I'm going to put the porn on the street. You're going to go ahead and collect money from people in church to say, we got to get rid of this porn. We're both going to make money. And Dabney Coleman said, you got balls, a thigh of a church, but with a lisp. I don't know why his character had a lisp.
You and I will split effective control of the city. You'll monopolize all pornography. Half the poor dumb sheep in Los Angeles will be forking over money to buy your sleaze, while the other half will be funding me with a means to fight it.
Reverend, you got balls as big as church bells.
Balls as big as church bells, with a lisp, as they negotiated out in the cemetery. Good for Dylan Darling. Also, though, let's be honest, the defense on the last play was dog shit. And this was pointed out by many people. Atrocious awareness of what everyone assumed would be the number one pick in the NBA draft back in November, Darren Peterson. He was just lost and clueless on that play, kind of turning away from Dylan Bells at the last moment when he could have at least faced up and forced a move by him. It was not good. Now, I'm not saying don't pick him number one overall just because of one play and bad on defense, but you add this to the pile of things with Peterson that makes you go, I don't know. Also, one of the other things about Darling, Pitino said the first thing you have to do when you're evaluating is understand that they all lie about their height, meaning players. So I thought I was getting a 6'2 guard until I met him. Found out he's the same size as me. That is hilarious. Speaking of buzzer beaters, Dylan Darling's buzzer beater, which has to be truly a ball goes through the hoop with 0.0 on the clock. It is only the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6th buzzer beater since Chris Jenkins and his buzzer beater to win the title in 2016. So it happens less than once a year. Dylan Darling did it this year. Derek Queen did it for Maryland last year in the round of 32. Lamont Butler did it for San Diego State in 2023. Jalen Suggs for Gonzaga did it in 21 against UCLA. Jordan Poole did it for Michigan against Houston in 2018. And Chris Chioza daggered Wisconsin in 2017. I remember that well. Sadly, Sweet 16, me and Gitter, and the boys, we were out in Vegas. fucking Chioza. Just a running, flinging, last-second shot. You son of a bitch. However, Darling is the only player, according to CBS Sports Research, to have made a true buzzer beater, a 0.0 horn, lights, and as his first made field goal of the game. And again, to think you had the balls, the size of church bills, to tell Pitino, Hall of Fame, legendary coach, don't forget, horny fucker. We don't need that right now, okay? We're focusing on the basketball. To tell that coach, yeah, run power. I got it. But Pitino said, okay, go for it. And thankfully for them, Kansas was effing clueless. The last time St. John's made the Sweet 16, get a load of this. USB flash drives did not exist. SpongeBob had not aired a single episode. Rick Pitino was coaching the Celtics and Believe by Cher was the number one song in the country. It's been a minute. Obviously, St. John's going to have their hands full against Duke, but that said, Duke needs to worry about St. John's. Why? Because Duke has won the national championship 5 times. Every time that they have won the national championship, the common denominator is they've beaten St. John's in the tournament all 5 times. Going to be a hell of a game. One more add on this. Did you notice how Pitino was very stoic after that shot went in? I mean, complete power down, head down, humble, stoic. Didn't run around, didn't act the fool, didn't go jump into a player's arms. Some people are saying this was a sign of respect to his fellow coaching legend, Bill Self, who after the game, Bill Self kind of meandered into a discussion about how much longer do I want to keep doing this? He's had heart problems. He is healthy enough to coach, say his doctors, but he also said, I want to make sure that if I'm doing this, it's fun what I'm doing. I would say this year overall for Kansas has been a disappointment, given the expectations, given the Peterson hype, and everything else. It's interesting because if that's in play, we know Carolina is very much in play as Hubert Davis hangs in the balance. Kentucky is not really in play because they're going to give Pope another year, but it was a massive disappointment there. Think about that. 3 of the 4 bluest of blue bloods, Kentucky, Carolina, and Kansas, all could be looking for coaches. Wow. Tickets for the regional in D.C. are nuts. I know part of me is like, damn, I should have stayed in town and not gone to Zabe Vegas and I could go see these games. Well, not if I don't have a press pass, which I probably wouldn't be issued. And I certainly couldn't drink and cheer. And I wouldn't be going if these ticket prices I'm looking at are accurate. Secondary market, quick snapshot right now, Maryland Sports Report on Twitter. Get-in price in the upper bleeders, $853. That's the cheapest. Good seats down in the 100 section. There's one for $5,187. There's a ticket for $2,008, a ticket for $2,350, ticket for $1,500. I mean, you do get 2 games, so there's that. But still, damn, it's a lot of money. Now let's go to the Florida-Iowa game. Why did Alvaro Fulgaris point to the sky after the 3? It was a great story, and it was for his father, who died at the age of 9. His mom, he's from Malaga, Spain, and his dad died at 9 years old. His mom didn't even get to see him since August. She had come to this sub-regional for the first time all year, and she was in the stands to get to see her son hit the game-winning shot. A game-winning shot that some Florida fans think he should have never had the chance to take. Why? Because he might have punched or tried to punch Alex Condon of Florida. Now, The punch apparently didn't land, and that was the explanation given to Todd Golden after this fracas in which there was a tie-up for a loose ball, players are wrestling, referees are blowing the whistle, Condon doesn't want to give it up, Condon rips the ball and Fulgaris attached to it to the ground, and then you can see, and I scrubbed this back and forth, I mean, Big Al definitely made a punching-like move, but he did not punch him. So here was the explanation according to Todd Golden.
Brands of Beard Gator Bait. Todd, I know you're not allowed to criticize officials, but can you explain?
I am, but I'm not going to do
that. I know.
I am, but it's very expensive.
Can you explain? Can you tell us how the play with Alex was explained to you by the officials?
Yeah, I was told that they threw a punch, but it didn't connect. So it didn't go any higher than a flagrant one. I'm not exactly sure what that means. And I really still don't understand why Condo got a technical. They're both fighting for the ball equally. Condo was just stronger and pulled him down to the floor, but they were both grabbing the ball. And so it was a confusing play, and I'm not really sure how that landed on that result.
All right, so that was his response right there. Here's how the call went on TBS. Take a listen.
Condon leaner didn't lean enough, and the rebound by Fulgaris and a tie-up.
Ooh.
And the possession.
Oh, Fulgaris hit it.
Watch out. Todd Golden goes into the pile. He's got to be careful, too. Chinyelu trying to separate. He's pushing his team away.
You know, they're going for that ball, and Condon certainly took him down, but I don't know what you saw, but I thought Fulgaris punched him.
Joe Lindsay, Bert Smith, Randy Richardson, they'll get together. They'll obviously look at this, but watch how this whole action unfolds.
Right there, they grab the ball, and they're just really fighting for it, and Condon's trying to get the ball away.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Fulgaris is probably out of this game. I don't know if he made contact or not, but it was close. Todd Golden is red hot on the sideline.
Well, that's, you know, look up the punch in the dictionary, and that's what you'll see.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if that's in the dictionary, because usually a punch needs to land. It was a punching motion that missed. So what does that make it? An attempted punch? Like attempted murder? Is it, did he pull his punch? Did he get halfway down with the punch and then realize, uh-oh, I should probably go for the ball? What if he meant to say, I was just trying to punch at the ball? That's not a foul to punch at the ball. What were you trying to punch? His face or the ball? What did you catch? Neither. I was right between the ball and the face. You know, at some point we have to revert to the old ways of basketball, rough and tumble basketball, which is shit's going to happen. Temper's going to flare. Things are going to get heated. And we're going to separate people and we're going to play on. And we're not going to necessarily microscope everything and try to get the calls perfect. There was also a play shortly after that near the end of the first half in which Florida's Ruben Chinyelu, big unit that he is, came flying into the lane and completely dump-trucked Trevin Jirak of Iowa. I mean, knocked his ass flat on the ground. Now, as I watched that play over and over, and I scrubbed it back and forth, I was like, obviously Jirak looked like he was going to box out. Sometimes when you go to box out and you box out late, you might not absorb the full force of another player who is rushing towards the rim. When does that rushing toward the rim become just going for the ball versus an attempt to completely knock you over? Stuff to say. There's a lot of gray area in basketball. The defense as well for Florida there was also ridiculous, and many people criticized Golden vocally for the fact that he played a pressing style in that final few seconds instead of just playing more like of a 1-2-2 trap to make it harder to get the ball up near where you might have a good look at the basket. Not only did he play pressing style, but his players did not adhere to the principles that the basketball people online that I read said, nope, should be doing this. Nope, can't be doing that. What are you thinking there? Another one of those, what are you doing?
What are you doing?
What are you doing? You cannot let the ball handling guard for the team that is trailing to get a clean inbound downhill with a head of steam with you running behind him. You just can't. And yet that's what happened. Not only did they have a good look wide open in the corner for Big Al, Big Al had just thrown a little lefty bounce pass. There was a dunk on the other side because Iowa had two guys wide open somehow in those last couple of seconds. Not good defense. Even more incredible, or some say insane, analytics have a different opinion on that being insane, Golden said they wanted a foul up two. Everyone knows you foul when you're up three, but Golden believes in fouling up two. Seth Davis on Twitter said Golden said after the game he wanted to foul one of Iowa's role players and see if he could make two free throws under pressure. That would have given the Gators one more possession or at least gotten them to OT. If you really want to get into a complete rabbit hole and a scrum, go ahead and start getting on Reddit threads debating, is Todd Golden right? There are analytics guys. In fact, one of them commented, I worked analytics 7 or 8 years ago. They tracked it in the NBA over 10 plus years. And yes, fouling up two increased your chances to win by over 4%, a significant bump. They presented this data to NBA teams, and teams told them that, yes, they believe the data, but their fans would simply go crazy. Sort of like Michael J. Fox in Back to the Future when he starts playing Chuck Berry before Chuck Berry was even alive. And he's just going crazy on the guitar, and everyone in the high school gymnasium stops slack-jawed like, what is this voodoo? And Marty McFly says, yeah, you're probably not ready for this. Seems like NBA fans would not be ready for teams fouling up two only. Of course, it's a lot different in the NBA when it comes to making free throws. They're pros. Even though there are some pros that are shitty at the line, as a whole, they can shoot a hell of a lot better than college kids. Iowa sliced and diced Florida with twos. Speaking of up two, here's a stat for you. Iowa shot over 70% on twos against Florida. 70% on twos. No team had ever done that against Todd Golden in his 144-game tenure in Gainesville. Basically, Iowa sliced and diced one of the elite rim defenses apart in en route to the Sweet 16. Also, did you see at one point the cameras caught comically overbuilt, super Stretch Armstrong buff dude in the Gators jersey with his blonde girlfriend? Of course she's blonde. It's Florida. What do you expect? And this was right after the go-ahead shot. Well, it was, I don't think it was after the go-ahead shot. Yeah, no, it was, I believe. Yeah, see, here's another thing about the stupidity of replay. We'll get to the replay in a second, but right after the bucket went through and they stopped the clock with 3.9 to go, they showed comically overstuffed Stretch Armstrong buff dude with his blonde girlfriend, and the blonde girlfriend had the full Surrender Cobra. She had the Surrender Cobra going where she was like combing her fingers through her blonde hair with just the most anguished look on her face. And that was when some crude men on my private text chat started making comments about exactly what kind of night she was going to have with this overbuilt psychopath at home if Florida was to lose the game. And I said, that is not funny. Domestic violence is never funny, and we don't even know. He might be a sweet guy. But it was quite a sight for sure. So on the replay part of it, the referees stopped the clock when Florida did not have a timeout. Now, I think this kind of worked against Florida. I love not calling a timeout in situations like this because it prevents the defense from getting set. It prevents your own guys from playing tight and nervous in the moment. You saw the kind of shot that Florida got off. They didn't get a shot. Oh, that's right. They had their guard dribble it under the basket, try to bounce pass it to a big man. Sorry, game's over. Should have shot the ball, dum-dum. to me, in the chaos of the scramble situation like that, I think it's way better to just inbound and go. You got 3 seconds. Now, they did it because they took the clock from 3.9 to, I think, 4.1. It was a tiny amount of time. And, of course, the fairies, we need to make things fair. We got to have replay. It's not fair. It's got to be perfect. We can do it. We got cameras. Let's do it. They think that, oh, no, that was right. You know, there's a big difference between 3.9 and 4.1. Thank God Nick Wright, who I do not always like, Nick Wright says, these refs acting like potentially adding 0.2 to the clock creates a more fair result than simply letting the game play, especially when the trailing team has no timeouts, is just outrageous, says Nick Wright. Replay is a scourge on sports and always has been. Nice. Jeff Schwartz on Twitter, former NFL lineman for 8 years, tweeted, I think I've gotten to the point where I'd rather just the call stand on the court, even if it's wrong, rather than these long reviews after nearly every single play. And you know what? As many people agree with me, it's never going to die because we are outnumbered by the fairies. But that was also ridiculous. Okay, let's talk about the replay in the UVA game. It's a two-point game. Tennessee's up. There's 27 seconds to go. Missed shot. Ball gets volleyballed, spiked off the head of a Tennessee player. And then Virginia's Dallin Hall reaches for it as it's bouncing over his head off the dome of the Tennessee player. And it appears that he might have possibly tipped it. That was the call on the court, that it was last touched by Virginia. They had many angles, and they had a lot of super slow motion and high definition. And I honestly said, it's as close as it can be. I think he didn't touch it. By the way, the ball does not change trajectory or rotation, but I don't know for certain. I would not stake my life on it. Well, guess who admitted afterwards, yeah, I touched the ball. Dallin Hall himself, which prompted somebody to point out that the University of Virginia, a school in my Commonwealth, which is way too highfalutin and requiring too much academic prowess for me to get in, I got rejected. Virginia is essentially a public-private university. They draw from out of state a lot, even though they're getting state tax money as the University of Virginia. My sister, Anne Marie, though, she is a graduate, proud Wahoo herself. My brother went to law school there, smarty pants that he is. They once upon a time did let dummies into UVA because Mr. X went to UVA. So at least there's that. But they have a thing at UVA, and maybe they have it at other schools, called an honor code. Why, Your Honor? And the honor code basically says this. It says, students sign a pledge not to lie, cheat, or steal. And they pledge on their work, quote, on my honor as a student, I have neither given nor received unauthorized aid on this assignment or examination. Now, in the day and age of AI, what is appropriate, unappropriate, what's authorized, not what's not authorized? Like, how do you navigate that in today's world? It used to be a single sanction of the honor code, which was administered by the students themselves, meant you were out, expulsion. Now there are lesser penalties depending on the circumstances. But here was Dallin Hall talking about the play and being honest about it.
Out of bounds call with the challenge. Do you know if you touched it, or what? Did you need an explanation? What?
Yeah, it happened pretty quick. I knew it hit me barely. So hopefully, you know, unfortunately, it worked out the way it did.
Cannot lie. Unfortunately, it hit me, he said with a wry grin. This has always been one of the hardest sort of conundrums for me as a sports fan. Like, if you know you touched the ball, are you in any way obligated? I mean, I know the answer is you're not obligated to admit it. You're supposed to die with the lie. But it's just fascinating to me. Like, I didn't do it. But afterwards he admitted, yeah, I definitely touched the ball. Now, I know what you're saying. Hey, Zabe, doesn't this mean that Naki and Butchie are coming to Zabe Vegas? Because they said, if we're not in the Sweet 16, I will come. That's what they said a month ago, both gentlemen. Well, for those who are coming to Zabe Vegas, and now we're at about 57 people as I have been updating my roster of participants Thursday and Friday at MGM Grand. Level up. It's going to be a great time. Pop a Shot Tournament. Going to have a fun time. Come on and watch some basketball and hopefully win some money. Both men have declined, politely declined. And I didn't even ask him. I mean, Butchie's a family man, 3 young children, and he's still pretty pissed off, I think, and devastated by Wisconsin's early exit. Obviously, Naki, with his daughter, who is the head of basketball ops for Virginia, kind of gutted and worn out. Naki said, I'd got home late last night and just hit me like a ton of bricks, and I'm not ready to get on a plane to go back out to Vegas. And I go, listen. No problem whatsoever. I didn't expect it from you guys. It's one thing to say, as you're getting excited for the tournament a month ago, thinking, hey, as long as we are, my team's not in the Sweet 16 or a team that my daughter is involved with is not in the Sweet 16, I'll be there. Well, that's like if maybe the circumstances aren't so gut-wrenching. I did get an email from somebody, Andy in Wisconsin, who said you should try to get both Naki and Butchie on together to talk about just what it feels like when your team just gets gutted like that. I said, you know what? That'd be a fun thing to do. Naki says he's down. I think Butchie would be as well. I don't want to rake him over the emotional coals about, okay, tell me how shitty it feels to lose like that. The tournament has been good. Can I say that? It has not been chock full of Cinderellas. It does not have very many low seeds going deep into the brackets. But you know what? We've had some incredible upsets. High Point was a thriller. Miami was nice as a first four game. VCU was stunning in their comeback against North Carolina. We had unforgettable shots from Iowa, St. John's, Kentucky. Don't forget as well about Texas. Hi-de-hi-de-hi-de-ho. And Nebraska and Vanderbilt was maybe one of the best games in a long time. The tournament still delivers, and we're only halfway through it. Not in terms of total number of games, but we have really good games coming up here. Couple other tournament nuggets, and then we will listen to Doug Gottlieb, the interview I did with him a couple days ago. There was a simultaneous shot in the UConn win over UCLA of both Dan Hurley and Mick Cronin screaming at their players, and lip readers could see that they both were saying almost exactly at the same time, get the fuck over there! Get the fuck! It's weird because Hurley is a more tolerable asshole than Cronin, probably only because he's won championships. Cronin is just an absolute, what's the right word? He is just an ass. He got a technical, though, for clapping, which is absurd. Didn't say anything. There was a camera right there courtside. You could see after a non-foul call, he just starts doing a loud one of these things, and the referee stopped with his back turned to him while he was running up the court, turned around, bang, technical. The announcers are like, I don't know if that was deserving of a T. I don't know why college basketball and the schools and the leagues haven't leaned on the referees to go, look, we're going to change how we evaluate you. We don't want to see technicals for anything other than a coach literally getting in your face, spittle flying, calling you a soulless cocksucker. or jive turkey, which would be an even bigger insult, if you know what I mean, semi-pro. I would like to see a lot fewer of these. You can't tee a coach up just for clapping, but it brings up this exchange that Cronin had with a reporter regarding, you know, how do you deal with the fact that a lot of people have kind of criticized you for your sideline behavior.
You and Coach Hurley have kind of caught heat from the media about kind of sideline
demeanor. What are you talking about?
Sideline demeanor, working officials.
Have you given me heat?
I haven't.
So that's why you're the only guy I pay attention to.
Okay.
Well, nobody else even comes.
National media.
Well, I mean, I respect you come to the game, so I respect you. You know, at least you're there. Okay. I mean, people that aren't there.
I know you don't care about it, but do you think it's fair that you have
it's ridiculous.
Gotten
everybody needs criticism. To get a life, bro.
Get a life, bro.
Get a life, man. Come on, man. Get a life, bro. You want to win big, but you think Coach Hurley's not supposed to be intense, but you want to win. Come on, man. We're not coaching Little League, buddy. Everybody doesn't get an at-bat. You know, come on, man. Paying us a lot of money to win games.
Okay, nice tough guy act, but guess what? You cost your team 2 points by being an ass at a key moment of the game. Would you tolerate that from one of your players? You don't have to get teed up to be, quote, intense. Even though, like I said, it's bullshit you get a technical for just clapping. I'm sure there was a lot of other things said before that probably put the ref on edge where he's like, listen, I don't want to see, hear, or feel any more bullshit from you, buddy boy. UCLA did not have a chance without their best player who was hurt, so down they go to UConn. My buddy, Kevin, the Desert Fox, he knows me so well, he knows my type when it comes to women. I think I've told him before, I'm like, long black hair, black eyes, fantastic. He texts me and says, this reporter in the St. John's game, the sideline reporter, she's your type. And I said, oh, Lauren Shahadi? Well, she's lovely and talented, but there's more to the story. She's actually from the mean streets of McLean. My mom used to teach with Lauren's mom. Lauren graduated from the same high school as me, Langley High, hard off of Road 193. State Road 193, otherwise known as Georgetown Pike, in the leafy, hilly, and very prosperous, tight off the Potomac River suburban enclave of Northern Virginia. But yes, Lauren Shahadi, Langley High, class of 2001. So I missed her by 15 years. She's not even my generation. But no, she does a great job, and she looks lovely and good for her. Here, by the way, was her getting Dylan Darling to say what Rick Pitino said to him in the huddle.
How did you will yourself there?
No, I don't know, to be honest. I don't know. 4 seconds left. Didn't have time for much. Hansel just sent me a screen and I went to the rim.
What did your coach say to you in that final timeout?
Yelling at me.
Is he in
yelling class? At me per usual.
Because it's
all. Do something.
You did something.
Yelling at me per usual. What was it? I don't know, to do something. That's so great. All right, couple of the nuggets real quick on the tournament. When you're hungry, you're hungry. It's just that simple. Somebody spotted a Miami University player in the concourse after they lost to Purdue. And for a second, they're like, is this just a guy cosplaying dressed up as a Miami player? Why is a player in uniform standing in line at the pizza joint in the concourse? It was actually Miami's own Malik Renault, and he did go to the concession stand after they lost to Purdue in his full uniform. Hey, man. Just played a basketball game, or at least some portion of it. He was hungry. What are you going to do?
What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
Just because the NFL season is now firmly in the rearview mirror does not mean the betting season is over. There is still plenty of opportunities to put a little something-something on the games. No matter what tickles your fancy, there is still plenty of action to whet your appetite. But just remember, where you bet is every bit as important, if not more so, than what you're betting on. That's why I tell my friends to go to mybookie.ag. MyBookie has been ahead of the game for years now. And why does that matter? Oh, I don't know, in a million ways. Better lines, better payouts, less rules. At mybookie.ag, use promo code ZABE and have your deposit matched halfway up to $1,000. That's a free cash bonus for making your deposit. Use promo code ZABE to claim the offer. Bet, win, and most importantly, get paid with MyBookie today. Bill Raftery still as good as ever. There was this sequence in the Illinois-VCU game in which Visevich from, where is he from? Here's the highlight, but Raftery punctuates it by saying, take me to the Balkans.
You're trying to run. Djokovic.
Here you go.
What? He misses on the jam. Wow. Boswell. Uh-oh. Give it up. Oh, I need V6. Wow. Take me to the Balkans, please.
Take me to the Balkans. EV6. That's who it was. Denying. I mean, listen to the names in this, by the way.
You're trying to run. Djokovic.
Here you go.
He misses on the jam.
Djokovic also. Ian Eagle is so fucking good.
Take me to the Balkans, please.
Ian Eagle, Bill Raftery, Grant Hill. Grant Hill's good, too. You know my story with Grant Hill. His parents almost bought the house across the street from mine on the mean streets of McLean, Virginia. Instead, it was Al Nabassi who bought it. He became my best friend ever. Maybe I would have been best friends with Grant Hill, but I know for a fact that Calvin Hill, who played wide receiver for the Cowboys, then later in his career for the Redskins, looked at the house. 7900 Stirrup Cup Lane. That's a fact. I know that. But he didn't buy it. That said, Peja Stojakovic's son, is also on VCU, and he's got some serious hops. The Euro invasion is on in full force. Mid-major life ain't for the weak. Here's how BetMGM's account summed it up. Have your best season in program history. Get bounced in the first week of the tournament. Watch your coach leave for a Power 5 team worse than you are. Lose all your players to the portal. Win half as many games next season. Wash, rinse, repeat. This in part because South Florida's Brian Hodgson is finalizing a deal to be the next head coach at Providence. Yes, it is not for the weak. And there's no stopping it. There's no changing it. It is what it is. Perfect bracket update. Do we still have a perfect? No. Oh. You sure? Yeah, no. Even with mostly chalk, except for a few sexy upsets, the perfect bracket has finally died yet again. I did look it up. Going into the final segment on Sunday, there were two brackets in ESPN's tournament challenge that were 43-0. 43-0. However, they're on opposite sides of the St. John's Kansas game, so they knew that one of them was going to lose. The other bracket lost when Virginia lost to Tennessee. So that's it. Crap seven, clear the line. It's a hell of a run, though, because the all-time recognized record is 49-0, which happened on the NCAA's site back in 2019. Speaking of the NCAA, they are joyless, paranoid, old-school pricks when it comes to the modern age of media. Not only are they suing DraftKings for using their terms, March Madness, etc., and I guess if you're going to trademark these things, then you're going to have to enforce them, otherwise the trademark is no good. But they are suing DraftKings, and I think FanDuel as well. But get this. A lot of people are like, where's our school social media stuff? They do a great job with all these awesome cinematic highlight cuts during the season. This note, teams are not posting many, if any, game highlights during March Madness. On Twitter, they're posting GIFs or stick figure drawings. On Instagram or Facebook, they're limited to just 1 minute, or they must pay in the thousands of dollars for the rights to use the footage. And the reason is March Madness and their strict content licensing rules. You're not going to get colleges to spend $5,000 just for social media. Let the schools do what they do. Promote the game, promote the players, promote the teams, the whole venture. You're not going to make significant money squeezing these little guys for some cash. I have a thought on the floors. Somebody brought this up. I want to read the tweet. I missed the days when the NCAA tournament used home floors, and you knew instantly where every game was being played. Every game now has the same generic feeling. Let's bring back this vibe. And they showed, obviously, the old school way where if they were playing a game in Chicago, it was on DePaul's court, and you saw the big DePaul logo. Same thing for Boise with the Broncos logo. They would put an NCAA sticker on the court, but that was it. Then they decided, well, we want to cover up the main center court logo. And so they started using very large decals, which were supposedly vetted and approved to be safe to put on these courts where you could then remove them when it was done. Well, lo and behold, with a little bit of dust, a little bit of sweat, a little bit of grime that got on these things, they became very slippery. Players were falling and they're like, shit, okay, well, we guess we can't do that. Now the NCAA spends the money to buy these courts. But one thing I don't like is that they should put on the court where that sub-regional is. Put the city clearly somewhere either on the end line, the sideline, or just wherever. I kept scanning going, okay, where? What regional is this again? I don't have my gargantuan bracket near me. I can't look it up. But where are they? And you don't see it anywhere. And that's a little bit frustrating. I wouldn't mind as well for the regional sites for there to be a city-themed flair to the center court jump circle in conjunction with the NCAA marks and everything else, but chances are they're not going to do that because if you're going to paint it on the court, then that costs money, and then you can't take it off very easily, and then the court is a one-and-done, and nah. Kentucky suffered their largest margin of defeat in the tournament in a long time. Going back to 1972, they lost by 19 to Florida State back then. They got wiped out by Iowa State. And that's not even the worst of it. Take a listen to what Nate Heise of Iowa State said about their approach to playing mighty Kentucky, the vaunted Big Blue Nation.
I think that that's something that we kind of identified before the game, even a potential for them to do that. And the way that we just turned them over and played our defense to where didn't look like they could do anything else. I think when you get them to that point, it's like, let's just be done. I think that's their mindset. So it was good to get them to that point.
Oh, man. They pretty much said this team is a bunch of folding bitches, and we are going to fold them up like a banquet chair and put them away. And that's what they did. And Nate Heise just said it in front of a camera, in front of a microphone. Wow. One more non-NCAA tournament thing for the men. This was on the women's side. Brenda Fries, the longtime coach and national champion with Maryland, was in an intense battle with North Carolina. One of her players, Oluchi Okananwa, I think I'm saying that right, had just committed a turnover, I believe, and was being pulled out of the game. And Brenda Fries goes up and gets right in Oluchi's face and starts screaming at her. I mean, we're talking nose to nose. white coaching stuff flying. And the player just stood there, this young gal, and listened and took the hard coaching. It was incredible to watch. Afterwards, Ms. Okananwa was asked about it, and she had an answer that was even more awesome.
Coach understands I'm a competitor at heart, and I've told her this before, and I'll keep on telling her this until forever. I love to be coached hard, and that's what she does with me every single day. And really what that was a regroup moment for myself and her telling me she believed in me, because sometimes that's really all you need to hear to get back out there. You know, it's a long game, lots of ups and downs, and I feel like after that conversation, that's when I really went back out and just did what I had to do for my team in that moment. So I'm forever appreciative of that.
That's good shit right there. That's a young woman who's been raised right by her mom and dad. That's beautiful to see. And that's great. Freeze was pretty much, they lip read her to say, I need you to lock the fuck in. This is not my moment. This is yours. You need to want it for yourself. And then she gave her a pat on the shoulder, sent her to the bench. Next time she was in, scored a bucket, good to go. That right there, that's the stuff of sports. Okay, tip time for the Sweet 16, as we'll be in Vegas. Come on and watch some basketball. 7:10 Eastern time Thursday. That's 4:10 Vegas time. The San Jose Regional, Texas-Purdue, first game out of the gate. Be Brian Anderson, Jim Jackson, Allie LaForce. Followed by Iowa-Nebraska at 7:30 Eastern on Thursday from the Houston Subregional, Harlan, Hummel, Stan Van, and Ms. Shahadi. And then the night games, 9:45 Eastern from San Jose, Arkansas, Arizona, B.A., Jackson, and LaForce. And then 10:05 from Houston, Illinois, Houston, Harlan, Hummel, Van Gundy, and Shahadi again. Friday, 7:10, from D.C., St. John's Duke, Ian Eagle, Bill Raftery, Grant Hill, Tracy Wolfson. Then from Chicago, Alabama, Michigan, that's Andrew Catalan, Steve Lapis, and Evan Washburn. Nightcap in Washington is UConn, Michigan State, again, Ian Eagle and company, followed by the Chicago Regional, Tennessee, Iowa State, to close out those two glorious days. Coming up, my guy, Scott Dolphin, Mr. Iowa, on what this matchup is going to be like. You are listening to the Zabecast.
There we go. This is called Iowa. Here we go.
So I'm going to file this one, Dolph, under things I learned just yesterday. Iowa and Nebraska fucking hate each other. Wow. And this upcoming game is going to be bonkers. It's already got a number of nicknames, Cornmageddon, in the border war. I mean, this is going to be awesome in basketball. As I joked to somebody, I'm like, this is going to be the whitest NCAA game since before the 66 Texas Western versus Kentucky game, where they finally broke the color barrier and started playing black players.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Although both teams do have some really talented African-American players.
They do have some. Although in the case of Nebraska, I said during the game to my guys in the text thread, because I just watched them. I hadn't watched any Nebraska all year, and it was all white guys, right? And I go, where's Nebraska's black guy? Is he sick today? And they're like, no, he's got four fouls.
That's just it. You know, and their best white guy played for the Hawkeyes the last 2 years, and that's Price Sanford. He's a hell of a player, a hell of a shooter.
Yes, that only adds to the intensity of this thing. So, with that said, explain to me why, Dolph, Iowa and Nebraska are so at odds with each other.
You know, they never played. They would play. I remember when I was a kid and when Hayden Fry first got to Iowa, the first thing he did was he put together some nightmare schedules. They were playing Oklahoma. They were playing USC. They were playing Nebraska like every other year in the non-conference before they got into the Ohio States and Michigan.
Yes, this is
in this football. Yeah. And I remember in 1980, which I think was Hayden's second year, they went to Lincoln and they just got curb stomped. It was like 51-0. But the next year, Nebraska was ranked top five in the country, came to Iowa City and lost. And in my lifetime, I think that was the first signature win for Hawkeye football. And then, so I think they started noticing, but you know, in those days they were winning national championships. They won a couple anyway. Their last one was what, in the mid 90s, something like that?
Sure. Okay, but that's football. And so
that was football.
So that was the seeds of the resentment between these two beautiful, sports passionate, flyover state, we make corn states, Nebraska and Iowa. Okay, continue.
Yeah, and if you've driven Interstate 80 through most of those states, it's boring as hell.
Boring.
There's nothing out there. Interstate 80, corn, pigs. Eastern Iowa is cool because there's a lot of hills around the Quad Cities. That's Mississippi River. And then Western Nebraska, you get out there, you got the Badlands. Yeah. But for the most part, states are, you know, rich with agriculture and nothing else. But basketball was never a rivalry between these two schools until Nebraska joined the Big Ten. And even then it was like, okay. But in the last 10 years, it's got nasty. Since Bull Pelini got fired, Iowa has owned this football series. They've won, what, 9 of 10?
Yeah.
And because of that and social media, the two sides are going back and forth in a big pissing match. And now it's carried over into basketball. Earlier this year in Iowa City, it was a rock fight. Iowa won like 57-53. And poor Price Sanford, who played the last 2 years in Iowa. And the only reason he left, he's a great kid. He's a great Iowa kid.
Yeah,
the only reason he left is because Fran McCaffrey got fired.
Yeah.
Iowa fans didn't care.
Yeah.
They crucified him when he was in Iowa City. They were in his head all night long, and it really affected him. I felt bad for him. I felt bad for his family. Ben McCollum, the Iowa coach, had to apologize afterwards, saying stuff like, you know, he's a great kid. He's welcome back here anytime. His older brother was a star at Iowa, Peyton Sanford, who's now with the Oklahoma City Thunder. But that didn't matter to Iowa fans. And when the game got played in Lincoln, the Nebraska fans were ready for him. So what we used to see as a football thing, Zabe, has now spilled over into basketball. And oh my God, they're playing for a chance to go to the Elite Eight.
This is incredible stuff. So I guess you were not upset to see Fran McCaffrey, the lunatic, finally let go. I mean, he was 17-16 last year, second round Big Ten tournament exit. It had run its course. Those who are not Iowa fans did enjoy seeing Fran fucking melt down on the sidelines.
Frantrum, they called it.
The Frantrum, right, exactly.
Yeah. But how about Fran? He took Penn to the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, look. So, yeah, he's landed on his feet. But this guy, McCollum, is something else. And I was talking to a buddy. I was texting a buddy who's a big college basketball guy, and he was saying, yep, this guy, all he does is win. And what he did at Division II, what school is it he was at? Northwest Missouri State was just insane. Like
he won four national championships at Northwest Missouri State. And Bennett Sturts, who nobody wanted, Ben McCollum saw something in him and said, you're my guy, come to Northwest Missouri State. Bennett Sturts went to Northwest Missouri State for 2 years, then went with McCollum to Drake. They went 31-4. Went to the NCAA tournament, took out Missouri out of the SEC in the tournament last year before losing in the second round. And now Bennett Sturts is at Iowa, and he's an All-American, and he was first-team All-Big Ten. This is a kid nobody wanted except for Division II schools.
Yeah,
but Ben McCollum saw something in him.
Yeah, Bennett Sturts being one of the guards for Iowa's team. So, yeah.
And their best player. And, you know, for the first 20 games of the season, how Bennett Sturts went, that's how Iowa went. If he didn't play well, they weren't going to win. But now, it's kind of cool, Zabe. They're getting contributions from guys that, I mean, last night you had Tavion Banks with 20 points, and he was a monster on defense, and he was one of the main reasons they won the game. Bennett Sturts hasn't played well in either NCAA tournament game for his standards.
Right. So for those of you that don't know, Scott's brother is the voice of the Iowa Hawkeyes, has been the voice of the Hawkeyes for how many years?
I think close to 30.
Gary Dolphin is Mr. Iowa.
Yeah, he's the big Dolph.
How was his call of the game winner by Alvaro Fulgaris, the Spaniard?
It was good. It was, as Gary calls him, Al. Yeah, to Al in the corner, three Al. Is good. And, right. Yeah, he's... the call was good. The call was good. And then I thought it was really cool. They kept it there. They didn't go to a break. Bobby Hansen's his partner, longtime NBA guy, won a ring with the Bulls. They brought over McCollum, and then they brought over a couple of the players. And so it was cool. It was like a 7 or 8 minute conversation from the time the bucket went in. And it was awesome to hear. For him, I think his greatest call ever is when they beat LSU in the Capital One Bowl on a last second Hail Mary pass on New Year's Day. This was probably number two. As far as his legendary calls go in Iowa. Yeah.
The guy for Nebraska, the play-by-play guy, he's been there 41 years, and he hasn't seen them win a tournament game till this tournament. Now he's called two of them, and so now you guys meet in this round. It's going to be an epic tilt. I also saw someone shared a video that during the earlier meeting this year, I guess you guys played Nebraska already this year.
Twice.
Someone had a cell phone video of like the handshake line. And apparently Fred Hoiberg, coach of Nebraska, got annoyed and slapped it out of somebody's hands. Did you see that? What was the story?
Yeah, and that was warranted, by the way. This was an Iowa fan who came onto the floor, was spouting and barking as Hoiberg was going through the handshake line, because they stormed the court. It was Iowa's first win over a top 10 team. The student stormed the court.
Storming the court.
He's lucky the mayor didn't bash him in the face, because Hoiberg could have popped him one. He had the right to do that.
They stormed the court in a league game in which they beat Nebraska. Nebraska.
That's true. I mean,
come on.
But think about it, Zabe. This is a program that has sunk over the last, Dr. Tom Davis had them so relevant. They were ranked number one in the country under him at one point when they had B.J. Armstrong and Roy Marble and Brad Lowhouse. Then, Steve Alford got them a couple of Big Ten tournament championships, but they didn't do anything in the tournament. They didn't do anything under Todd Littlehider. And with all due respect to Fran, he was there 15 years and he never got out of the first weekend. So this fan base is so hungry. I mean, the home game attendance has shrunk in some cases like 6,000-7,000.
No.
Yeah, it's bad. The women sell out just about every game in Iowa City, but the men don't.
That's crazy. I watched a lot of McCollum-related material last night, getting to know about him. Couple things. It's so funny that so many of these big schools do not know how to hire a fucking coach. They will go with a retread just because he's been at the D1 level. That nobody until now, it took four national championships at D2 for some school to go.
Yeah, hey, and
I think this guy might be pretty fucking good here. Let's hire
him. He is good. And it's a great story. His mom was the district attorney in Iowa City. He was born in Iowa City, University of Iowa Hospitals. And then she took a gig in northwestern Iowa, so they left town. She got cancer, almost died, but she survived, and it was just a great story. So now he's back in Iowa City. There's a great picture that's floating around on Twitter right now, the last two coaches to take Iowa to the Sweet 16. Did you see that? With Dr. Tom Davis and him?
I think I sent it to you, but maybe not. But
that's you. You did. You did send that.
Yeah, and it's literally a picture of McCollum as a kid, as a
when he had hair.
10-year-old, like a 10-year-old McCollum. With a picture with Dr. Tom Davis. Oh, God, that is so fucking good. I love sports.
It's amazing.
Sports. It's so awesome.
What the NCAA tournament is just amazing as well. Did I read this today? This is the first time two Big Ten teams have met in the Sweet 16 or
since
later.
2000, I believe.
Yeah, it was Wisconsin and Michigan State in the Final Four.
Yeah.
Hey. And the last time they met in the two Big Ten teams met in the Sweet 16 was 1980.
Yeah. Well, look, the Big Ten has six teams into the Sweet 16, I think, or seven, maybe.
No, they have six. UCLA lost on Sunday night. That would have made it seven. But they got six of the 16.
Right. They've had a great tournament. Big Ten is really doing it right when it comes to basketball. Maybe this is the year they win it all. Who knows?
You know how long it's been?
since 2000, since Michigan State.
The Flintstones, yeah. The Michigan State Spartans when they beat Wisconsin in the Final Four.
So not only Iowa and Nebraska, but you got Illinois on just the other side of that South bracket. They, too, are a big ag state once you get outside of Chicago, obviously, down where the campus is. And they've got a bunch of Europeans on their team. They're all Slavics, you know. There's a bunch of itches. Bitches and itches on Illinois. And that guy, Ivicic, had the most sick sequence for them, Illinois, in their win. He blocked the shot at the rim, and then he dunked it so hard. It was like, oh, my God, he came back down the other way. Like, ah!
They're really good. I mean, you know, it's mind-boggling how Wisconsin is already out of this tournament when they won at Illinois.
Yep.
They won at Michigan. They took out Michigan State. They took out Purdue at Purdue. Yeah. And you look at how good these teams are and the Badgers are sitting home. I'm just stunned by that.
Yeah, you're stunned. Everybody's stunned. Everyone's disappointed. But many are saying, 'tis Wisconsin sports. The heartbreak never ends. It's a little bit with me because, let's be honest, they won an NBA championship with the Bucks and Giannis. They have won Super Bowls before. I mean, come on. They won a lot of Rose Bowls in football with the Badgers. So there are places.
Women's hockey won the national championship yesterday. Yeah,
right, which I then had to rub the noses of my Wisconsin friends saying, don't worry, you're a women's hockey school now.
You can do that now, Zabe.
It's all fun. So Iowa State is through over on the other side of the bracket in the Midwest region. They play Tennessee. Can you give for our listeners the basic breakdown of Iowa versus Iowa State?
That's the rivalry. I mean, as much as, you know, hate week happens on the both sides of the Nebraska-Iowa rivalry, and Iowa has a great rivalry with Minnesota, obviously, the only two big kids in town, Iowa, Iowa State, and the state of Iowa, they do not like each other. And the Cyclones have kind of owned the Hawks in just about every sport, including wrestling, which Iowa had beat them like 30 years in a row. Iowa State beat Iowa in wrestling this year. They beat them in football. They beat them in women's basketball. And it was a good game in Ames when Iowa State was ranked like third in the country. Guys went up there and lost by 466-62. It was a one-point game with a minute to go, but that Iowa State team is scary good, Zabe. I could see them. I mean, they're a regular visitor to the Sweet 16. They've been to a few Elite Eights, but they could win the national championship. There's so many teams left that could win it all, right?
I was going to say, so what is the perception of the schools between Iowa and Iowa State? Which is the better school? Iowa,
well,
I'm guessing?
I mean, I'm probably the wrong guy to ask.
I know you're biased. What do people generally say?
Okay, so if you are into agriculture, which a lot of people are in the state of Iowa, you won't find a better university than Iowa State University. We call it MooU in the state of Iowa because of the ag that is so good there. If you want to be a dentist, go to Iowa. They both have their fine qualities. Personally, if you ask me, Iowa City is a better campus than what you'll find in Ames. That's just me. In fact, I would put Northern Iowa, UNI, which was also in the NCAA tournament this year, I would put that campus ahead of Iowa State. But again, I'm a little biased when it comes to the Cyclones.
Yeah. If you want to be a dentist, go to Iowa. You're in Iowa City. If you want to go
if you want to get into animal husbandry.
Agriculture and animal husbandry, go to Ames. And if you want to fuck some sluts, go down to Des Moines, because that's where they're at, just right down 35.
Was that at Drake?
I don't know, man. I'm on a map of Iowa getting myself oriented right now.
But if you want to play basketball, you can go to any of them right now. I mean, Iowa State is where it's at. And I appreciate the fact that, you know, living in Milwaukee, their head coach is from Milwaukee, TJ Otzelberger. They have three kids on their roster from Wisconsin, and probably the top recruit in Wisconsin from here in the Milwaukee area, West Dallas Central, is going to Iowa State next year. So he really knows how to recruit the state of Wisconsin.
I love it. You know what? I love flyover country having their moment in the sun. I believe somebody put a circle around like 7 of the 16 teams still left, and it was all in a tight little radius there between all those flyover schools and proud fan bases that are ready to rumble. And this Iowa-Nebraska game, man, I wish I could go to that because that is going to be off the hook.
So I've got somewhat of a dilemma. It's opening day for the Milwaukee Brewers that day, so I will be at the ballpark. Hopefully the traffic will clear out and I can get home by 6 o'clock at night. And I'll be able to watch that game from the
beginning. I hate that baseball is starting this early, you know, because it does impinge upon, we need to be able to savor the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight. And then we can get, like it used to be, we could wait till Monday to get to opening day. Right. Or even, you know, later than that in April. Now it's.
Some people get to wait till Monday for opening day, but for, you know, half the league, you're starting on Thursday or Friday. And I'm with you. I would much prefer we get the final four over before we get deep into baseball season. Who's your bracket champion? Who'd you pick?
Who cares what my bracket champion is? I think it's Duke versus Arizona.
Okay. I took Houston because I figured everybody else in my little money pool would be taking one of the number one seeds.
You picked an unsexy two, but Houston's really, really good. They're a tough piece of jerky. So, yeah. A Houston-Iowa State final would probably win most pools if it were to happen, you know?
That'd be fun.
So.
That'd be fun.
All right. So who does grow the best corn, Iowa or Nebraska?
Well, I know there was a song when I grew up that said, Iowa, that's where the tall corn grows because we have the blackest dirt. You get out to western Nebraska, they call it the Badlands. It's just not good soil. Okay. So if you're counting the entire state, I'm going with Iowa, man. I mean, from up there on the Minnesota border to down there on the Missouri border over here towards Wisconsin and Illinois, we've got the best soil, so we got the best corn.
All right. If you put your five best ears at the state fair against Nebraska's five best ears, you're telling me to forget the overall, we've got more volume of better soil and blah, blah, blah. Just the five best, like in basketball, would your five ears beat Nebraska's?
Yeah, of course. I mean, it's kind of a myth that they have good corn because they're the Corn Huskers.
Yeah.
And we're not.
It's all marketing. All bullshit. Like the fact that Wisconsin has more lakes than Minnesota, but Minnesota coined the phrase land of 10,000 lakes.
Land of 10,000 lakes, yeah. Well, what they claim in Minnesota is that to be a lake, you've got to be bigger, where apparently Wisconsin claim a smaller area as a lake.
They claim stock ponds as, quote,
lakes. Yeah. Minnesota's saying that's a pond, bro.
Do you even lake, bro? You don't even lake. All right. I love it, man. Good stuff. Dolph, I miss you dearly. All right, buddy. And we'll talk again.
Thanks, Abe.
I will end on this today. Never forget, people, your chances of death in any mundane activity or situation are not high, but they're never quite zero.
I've told her the dumb ways to die. So many dumb ways to die.
Death by pickleball and death by quadruple amputee / cornhole professional. One of Charlie Kirk's mentors, Jeff Webb, a 76-year-old man, described by Turning Point USA as a visionary who helped shape generations of young leaders, died Friday, 2 weeks after suffering a serious head injury when he fell playing pickleball. The conservative author, who is also widely dubbed the father of modern cheerleading, succumbed after 2 weeks on life support. Unbelievable. Pickleball death. I thought it was just for blowing out Achilles for old men. I remember this when people say, oh, it's safer than tennis. I haven't heard about a tennis death in a long time. And then there's this headline. Quadruple amputee cornball professional arrested on murder charges. Dayton Weber is this guy's name, and he is going to jail. He's accused of shooting and killing 27-year-old Bradrick Michael Wells in La Plata, Maryland. That's Southern Maryland, hun. before driving off in his Tesla with the body of this 27-year-old friend, enemy, Uber ride, I don't know what was going on, in the back of his car. Apparently, he stopped after driving with the dead body after shooting him. I know you're saying, well, didn't you just tell me, Zabe, he is a quadriplegic? How could he possibly shoot a gun? Well, that's because he learned to play cornhole with his amputated limbs. And he became very good at it. He was an inspirational story. ESPN ran a feature on him going, wow, look at this great inspiration for other disabled athletes. Dayton Weber has taught himself to be a top flight cornhole player. He's on a pro team. He's flinging the bags with his little stumps together. You're like, all right, all right. Well, somebody posted a video of him shooting a handgun, and loading it with his stumps on the ground. I'm watching it going, oh my God, well, there you go. This is not unusual, by the way, for people with missing limbs or fingers or whatever. They adapt and they find ways to do it. People that lose their arms become incredibly dexterous, many of them, with their feet, and can do incredible things with their feet. Well, this guy puts the handgun in between his two stumps, somehow gets one of his stumps on the trigger. Pop, 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 pop. Imagine, though, you are somebody on the street. A guy in a Tesla pulls over. There is a bloody dead body in the back. And a quadruple amputee is saying, help me get this dead body out of the back. Of course, the people that he approached to ask for this, quote, favor said, yeah, no, and they ran away and called the police. And he was quickly arrested. How do you handcuff a quadruple amp? You are the most insensitive bat. What? That's a legitimate question. Legitimate. Anyway, hell of a story and a dumb way to die. You would think that if you're in that car and you're arguing with a guy who's a quadriplegic professional cornholer and is getting heated, that you could see him fumbling around with a gun in between his stumps and be able to knock it out of the stumps. So I guess in that regard, keep your head on a swivel. Lesson learned. Thanks for listening. Sorry to end on a macabre note. I don't write the news. I just report the news. Okay, people? You discuss at your own leisure. Thank you to Dahl for coming on today. Thank you for listening. And we are heading towards Vegas. I got one more episode this week. We'll see. I'm going to do some live stuff, social media stuff from Zabe Vegas. I can't promise a full episode Thursday or Friday, but I am going to hopefully work on delivering you exactly what you need and crave. Thanks for listening. Have a great Tuesday, and we will see you next time. Just because the NFL season is now firmly in the rearview mirror does not mean the betting season is over. There is still plenty of opportunities to put a little something-something on the games. No matter what tickles your fancy, there is still plenty of action to whet your appetite. But just remember, where you bet is every bit as important, if not more so, than what you're betting on. That's why I tell my friends to go to mybookie.ag. MyBookie has been ahead of the game for years now. And why does that matter? Oh, I don't know, in a million ways. Better lines, better payouts, less rules. At mybookie.ag, use promo code ZABE and have your deposit matched halfway up to $1,000. That's a free cash bonus for making your deposit. Use promo code ZABE to claim the offer. Bet, win, and most importantly, get paid with MyBookie today.